We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This thing on?
See, now I'm getting mad.
Because it's getting ready to be on.
I want my whiskey to bite me a little bit. This is the kind of psychopath that I hang out with. I got beat up outside of a Denny's.
The Rock Pile Report with Buffalo Bills season ticket holder Drew Geer.
He likes to get in the X's nose. Something I can't do with this podcast because I drink too much.
Chris Kruger.
My rollerblading, blonde mohawk producer.
The pettiest, hardest drinking Bills podcast.
I'm an adult. I know what I'm about.
Everybody to another edition of the Rock Pile Report podcast. I'm your host, Bill, season ticket holder Drew Geer. That's our producer, Chris Kruger. Ryan Lacel of Rock Sports Network in studio with us. We are here doing our 2022 season recap show. Right off the top, we all know that that season left a bad taste in most of our mouths. And that's where I want to start, because Chris, you bring down this Tupperware container and you're like, we're going to try these. What the fuck is in there?
Oatmeal raisin cookies made from by Jessica.
I don't know what I dislike more, oatmeal raisin cookies or Bruce Springsteen. Like, they're up there.
Well, what is Bruce Springsteen, the oatmeal cookie of music?
Pretty much. They're both universal. They're like, everybody will tell you that they like them, but they can't tell you why. It's like, why do you like The Boss? They're like, well, he's iconic. For what?
Well, it's because you always know what you're getting from him, right?
I mean, yeah, which is usually crap.
Springsteen's put out the same album for the last 45 years that he's been doing music.
I think I've said this before on this podcast. You don't get to have a catalog of 2,500 songs and have me tell you five of them are all right. I'm not the fucking problem here, Bruce. You are. Yeah. Oh, whoa, Jersey. Get out of here. Drop that. Lacel, just like these cookies.
What is your overall opinion on homemade oatmeal raisin cookies?
Yeah, homemade oatmeal is the only way I'll eat them. Homemade
oatmeal raisin. Did you say Bob Everly brought some to the final tailgate?
Brought some store-bought to the tailgate as a troll, and then people ate them.
No.
Was enraging to me.
You can't do store-bought.
No.
So fire that open.
And then, Lacel, you also brought something.
Yeah, I brought you a gift. I know you enjoy beer, and I know you always enjoy the beer that I bring for you. So I have a Rochester Classic Jenny. This is a Cran Orange Keller beer, which is in the vein of, you know, they have their seasonal beers. Springbok is out now. You and I talked about it. I told you I was going to bring Springbok, but I figured, yeah, he would enjoy that too much. So let me bring him something with fruit in it, because I know he hates it. And I'm going to make you try it, because I make you try all of these.
There's fruit in my beer.
Yep.
There's fruit in these cookies.
Somebody open those cookies.
I got you. I've been eyeing these since I came in. I don't know what they were.
Yeah, there's only four left.
Okay, so these are okay. I thought they were like divvied out.
No, they're just
there's something specific with the cookies that they're spaced this way.
No.
It's just what hasn't been ravaged by you and the little one upstairs, right?
Yes. Okay. They were made on Saturday.
So I'm going to chase this bite of cookie. I'm going to take the smallest one left in the box. Lacel, if you'll grab one here. Now, at first glance, toasty outside. I can. There's visible raisins though, which means there's a lot of raisins in this thing. Like if I can count three or four right off the bat, then that means there's got to be like
yeah.
Seven.
But if you're gonna do raisins,
somebody like, throw me a cookie. Do I can't reach. Look at that left-handed catch. I'm an athlete.
So I'm smelling this beer. And the fruit smell that comes out of here almost reminds me of high C, like a high C juice box. So I'm certain.
High C orange?
Yeah. Like, so I'm certain that the first sip is just going to be wonderful. I can't wait. First of all, cookie.
These are damn good cookies.
Yeah.
I got to say.
Oatmeal raisin.
I like the molasses in this. Mm-hmm. It's like a molasses. You know what? I want to hate this. You have no idea.
But it's homemade. That's the difference.
They're good. Yeah, they're good.
They're homemade cookies.
I'm still searching.
They've got a nice crisp on the
guys,
outside.
We're eating on a podcast.
Yeah.
We're pros, right?
Yeah.
Well, at least how's the beer?
Well, the one Buffalo sports food podcast is ending, right? So maybe that's for your guys' next lane. Get into that.
Yeah, we could take over for Nate and Bruce.
Okay, first of all, nothing about that beer says beer.
It's like a seltzer, isn't it?
I don't even know like a seltzer. It's like, because seltzers are usually dry, like a dry wine. This is very fruity. It's like in your face. Like I said, it's almost like someone spilled a Natty Light into a high C juice box. Who are the people who are... And yet, I know that these things probably fly off the shelf, don't they?
Yeah.
Assholes. Who are these people?
Nate Geary.
Nate Geary. Nate, so, I'm going to put that guy in a headlock for
so this. So this came on the heels of their Kolsch, right? They did the grapefruit Kolsch, the ruby red. Then they did the other Kolsch this summer. And then on the heels, they released the Cran Orange. This was like around Christmas time. You could see this as a Thanksgiving-y, Christmassy beer that got sold.
All right, that butter cookie did it. There was a giant, giant cluster of raisins in there.
I think these are good cookies. I don't care what you say.
All right.
I'm far more worried about Drew's taste than anything after this cookie and him saying
God.
Bad.
Yeah, well, as I sit here and sip my juice box in an orange can.
I should have brought you a straw.
Exactly. This needs a straw. The 2022 Bills season recap. It's unfortunately over. And as of today, the AFC has been settled. And settled in a way that's left us once again on the outside looking in as football fans. It was a trip. This season was a real emotional roller coaster. I want to take this time tonight with you all to take a very Rock Pile Report look back at the season that was, what we just saw play out. And I think in what's a very fitting fashion, we need to start with what we just saw this past weekend. The Bengals lost in the AFC title game.
You are one pathetic loser.
It couldn't have happened to a better group of people.
Now,
Ryan, the officiating in this game, what was your knee-jerk reaction to it as it was happening?
So, I mean, I'm never a fan of bad officiating in general, like most, but I don't tend to be the that changed the game guy, but some of those calls were quite bad, right? Like the last play where Mahomes got hit late out of bounds, that was a late hit. The one that the phantom third down was the one that got me, right? Because if you watch it back, like there was the ref that came running in from the backside blowing his whistle. You could tell that he was trying to get the play to stop. And there was a play earlier in the game where you could hear the whistle blowing, but the players clearly couldn't hear it. I mean, that's Arrowhead, right? That's mm-hmm. that stadium. So,
Burrowhead.
Yeah. Well, at most, that play threw the rhythm off of the game. But I mean, it's not like Kansas City scored on that drive, right? They wound up going three and out after that. After they converted the first down, they went three and out and then punted. So there was really no impact on that particular, you know, that the, what is it, fourth third down or whatever they called it. That you know. I mean, the refs are bad. It's what they are. It's what the NFL is. They refuse to make their refs full time, and they refuse to augment where they can augment with technology. And this is what you get. You get questions. You get, is it fixed? You get, you know, and it's a serious problem for the NFL now, because now people are, it's a narrative. The F word is getting thrown around a lot in terms of like fixed games and things. Mm-hmm. And when you're partners with DraftKings, FanDuel, like you can't have that.
Yeah, but you know what you can have? Is Eli Apple going out looking like a sucker. I'll tell you this. I had tears in my eyes I was laughing, and my wife goes, "What's so funny?" I go, "Honey, they're going to give Kansas City a mulligan on a third down conversion." And she's like, "Isn't that bad?" I go, "It's terrible. It's one of the most hilariously bad things I've ever seen. And yet it's happening to Cincinnati." Awesome.
If it was against Buffalo, you would have broken your TV.
Oh, 100%. And then they called on the very next play. They called holding on Eli Apple on a weak holding call. And I picked, like, I only had one beer during the whole game. I was a little bit under the weather. I spent like 3 hours making chili that day. I took my one beer and just did like a victory lap with one finger in the air slowly around the living room. Cause I'm just looking at Eli Apple's dumb face. Just, what, me? I held? No, you didn't, stupid, but they're going to call you anyway. Yeah. Look, he still hasn't logged back onto social media.
And his mom, his mother deleted her Twitter.
And she should.
Yeah. I mean, listen, I mean, that whole team.
Marcel Louis-Jacques had one of the best tweets where it was. Do you remember the line in the movie Airplane when they show the people lining up?
I remember every line in the movie Airplane.
A bat and a gun. And then the next guy has like a knife and the other guy's got like a medieval mace and they're all just lining up. He's like, Eli Apple's mentions as soon as the clock hits zero. It's like, yeah, that's exactly it. You better stay the fuck on social media because you called down the thunder.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I saw a thing. Somebody tweeted out. They were like, Eli Apple. Someone was like, that dude better start prepping his resume for jobs somewhere. Because they said this was before the playoffs started. Pro Football Focus was going down all of the playoff teams. And they pointed out that Eli Apple, in terms of just like overall score, was like in the regular season, in like a couple key stats, was like 60th or less. They were like in a league with 68 cornerbacks. Eli Apple is 60th or worse in all of these key areas.
Yeah.
And yet he talked a ton of shit.
I mean, that whole team did, right? I mean, they had this whole, like, we have to create this narrative around us because, I don't know, they felt disrespected or whatever the reason behind it is. But you could just tell, like, every week they were creating these narratives of, you know, going into the last game of the season, oh, there's no reason for us to play our starters, but here we are because, you know, the NFL decided to screw us over and now we got to win so we don't have to do a coin toss. And then it got into the wild card game. And, oh, you don't know. Yeah, everybody's saying we're only going to be in this because Lamar's not playing. That was their big thing going into the Baltimore game, right? And then it took literally a 98-yard play where if the quarterback, if Huntley was an inch taller, that would have been a touchdown. But because he's 5'8", they were able to rip the ball away, and that's the only reason that they got into the Buffalo game. And then it was, well, they're selling tickets to a game that hasn't even happened yet, ignoring completely the fact that people have to plan for this stuff. And
well, here's what, like, I like. I like, to your point, they crafted this narrative of like disrespect and like, oh, this is, everything's rigged against us, blah, 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 blah. And the NFL went, you want to see rigged?
Yeah.
I'll show you rigged against you, assholes.
Yeah.
It takes a lot for me to ever root for a quarterback who looks like Darlene from Roseanne. And yet they made me a Kansas City Chiefs fan on Sunday. That's how much I hate that. The fans, the city, I can't disparage them. They've done a lot for Bills fans. I still respect the hell out of them. That football team can all collectively kick rocks.
Yeah, and that was going into the game. You know, I always talk with, you know, my family about, you know, who do you want to win? And I was like, I think that Philly's going to cave either of these teams' skulls in. So as far as I'm concerned, I hope that Kansas City beats Cincinnati.
Just so we can watch Patrick Mahomes lose again?
Just so they can say, you know, Kansas City, you know, or Cincinnati shouldn't have been in that game. You know, all those things that you're starting to hear now. And then Kansas City, they're going to get their heads caved in against Philly because Philly is an unstoppable force. And they're not going to have the problem that Cincinnati had in terms of trying to get near Mahomes. That ankle's going to rear its ugly head come against Philly, because that team,
how many games can you play on that?
I mean, how many teams can you play? How many times can you play a team like Philly that, well, they've got four guys along their front seven that have 10 sacks?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, that's and they've got the linebackers that can
Didn't
take away
Bills
Kelce.
Do that in like 17.
So
yeah. And then they went out and got Miller, right? Because that was what they were going to do, was create chaos around
and it worked
these quarterbacks.
Right,
and
until,
it worked until he got hurt.
Until Miller got hurt.
Yeah.
Right up until it didn't.
As we walk away from this, I'll say this. First of all, I'll see you in hell, Eli Apple. You'll be there. I'll be there. We'll have a big party. Also, I walked away from this game Because all the people who are screaming about the officiating, huh? That's not fair. I'm laughing and everyone goes, how can you celebrate this? And I go, they would have done it to us.
Mm-hmm.
The NFL would have absolutely put us over a barrel the same way they did the Cincinnati Bengals. I feel in the aftermath of that game, I told my wife, watching this game play out, I feel like a guy who missed his flight. And then I find out later the plane crashed. Like, that could have been me. That could have been me getting massacred on TV, but it wasn't. I dodged that bullet. So if for that reason alone, I love the way it went.
Yeah.
And that's my silver lining for how the Bills season ended. Now, as far as how the Bills season went, and just some superlatives and some talking points as we try to put a bow on all of this for our own sake. First of all, Chris, favorite tailgate of the year? Let's start there. Let's talk about tailgate action since it's such an important part of what we do and also just our podcast listeners.
I mean, for me, it's a Packers game.
I agree. Lasel?
Yeah, Packers. I didn't join you guys for that one, but yeah, Packers game was...
Why not? Are you better than us?
I'm not. No, I'm not.
Well, he is, but...
Yeah. Well, that's okay.
That's for
another conversation. No.
That's for another day.
No, I mean, because it was, you know, on the heels of the storm, you know, and it was a community effort to even get to the point where people could park, you know, in these lots and stadiums, and the lot was a sheet of ice. I mean, all the stadium lots were just sheets of ice and people slipping. And
were you talking about the Packers game or the Miami game?
I'm talking about the Miami game.
Yeah, okay.
That Miami game for me. Yeah.
Okay.
Packers game was a good one, but not a memorable tailgate for me.
See,
I'm thinking of Miami.
The Miami one was cool because you're right. Like, Chris, we had to shovel out our own spot that day.
Mm-hmm.
The lot owner was like, well, you guys can park at 1. I've got a loader coming. I was like, 1? It's 10 a.m. We got stuff to do. So we just hand shoveled it. And him and I were talking about it. It's like, don't work too hard. Don't break a sweat because the sweat will freeze.
Yeah, we had one shovel we kept switching
off. So we would just switch off every 10 minutes. And then the one person, Chris would make a cocktail.
Yeah.
And he'd make me a cocktail. And then whoever wasn't shoveling would drink. And that's just how we traded off. It was some of the best teamwork Chris and I have ever had on anything. For me, it had to be the Green Bay tailgate. I mean, just to walk it back, best weather.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Best, Chris, probably best tailgate group of attendees we've had in a long time.
Also true.
People came from all over the place. Scott from Nebraska showed up with jerky.
Oh, yeah. It's own jerky. That was
own jerky and an IPA is... which I've been saving to talk about. It's called Fairy Nectar from Cross Strain Brewing.
I could have sworn we already reviewed this.
I'm drinking the last one now.
There we go.
Saving it for a solid occasion. So he comes. Super Mexican shows up. He just, I don't know, his wife was like, oh, this seems like someplace you'd want to go. Last minute, she used her points on her card and just sent him. So he shows up at our tailgate, and he's just a wild man. Kyle and his dad, Wendell... Jay Ditro and his buddy had a better setup than we did, I think.
Yep.
Like, that was impressive. Two guys who literally last year were making breakfast in the tailgate spot next to us. They were like, oh, we're podcast listeners. We do this stuff. I can never remember his friend's name. I just know he's the cook. He wears glasses and camo pants. And he almost, like, there's something to that guy. Like, you know how you meet a person and you go, you're friendly, but also I bet if I pushed you, that guy could do. That guy's a wrecking ball if you make him.
Yeah,
I love it.
And Jay got me a bottle of. I still have a little bit left of Whistle Pig Farm Stock Rye. Absolutely delicious bourbon.
So what I love is these guys went from the guys who showed up and were like had a folding table and they were cooking bacon on the ground on a cold like a tiny little pan in this little heater to make breakfast burritos to. They have a generator and a TV and lights. And I was like, this is fucking impressive. You guys rule.
Yeah.
Bill and Cassie from the Bills and Beers podcast showed up. Cassie was hammered. It was funny. Cam showed up with his craft cocktail bar that I think puts a lot of what Chris does to shame.
Yeah.
We're going to test that theory later.
He does. Well, Cam touches in an area that I don't really dabble in, which is Bloody Marys. So he had his own like puree that he did for Bloody Marys.
Oh, he's incredible.
Yeah, even when Brett showed up, he made Brett a Bloody Mary, and Brett was like, you know,
tequila.
Yeah, it was like, oh, I don't really dabble in the Bloody Mary sector, but
if you're going to make me a free cocktail, I'm going to drink it.
And incredible.
Yeah, like, that's the key for you, Chris, is you've got to take it. You've got to take it on the road, right? You've got to be able to take your cocktails.
Yeah.
Well, I did
and be able to make them remotely, which is a difficult challenge.
I did bring over for the what game? What, the
Miami?
When we were at we played Wild Card Sunday, so Saturday night Wild Card, like the Jaguars game. I showed up. I got for Christmas Jessica's
a mobile bar kit in a duffel bag. It's a mobile bar thing.
It rolls up.
Enraging. Almost like a cat. I told him he put it on top of my bar and let it sit there. And like a cat, when you leave a glass too close, I'm like, I want to shove this thing on the floor so bad.
But yet, you would probably really get a kick out of like a mobile, like a grilling set like that, right?
Yes.
Like a duffel bag that rolls out.
Something I could roll out and cook on.
You lay it out. It's got all your accoutrements there to cook. You know, different size tongs, and got like the kebab skewers.
I mean, I kind of have that now. Yeah. It's just real.
But you need it in like a duffel bag, like a toolbox format, right? Well, like a vinyl bag.
Iman has that, and I've been trying to replicate it. I've been trying to make the poor man's version of it.
But where Chris's cocktails are your barbecue, you're not able to kind of marry those together and see where he's coming from.
You hit on that. Brett Coleman and EJ Snyder were at that tailgate.
Yep.
He got high-end video of me slicing tri-tipped, and my wife was like, Food Network wouldn't shoot something as well. And then I think one of my favorites, like, Iman and I made a killer spread of food. The brisket that he made, the tri-tip I made, both were on point. And John Fina showed up, got drunk, and just was letting people walk around with his AFC championship ring.
I made the rounds to like other. I went over to the Mafia House and the Hammers lot to see if I ran into Brett and EJ again at the Hammers lot because they were.
I still can't believe they drank out of that fucking bowling ball.
Yeah, Brett was filming some stuff. I came back and I did a Drew thing. I came back to the tailgate. I see John Fina, and John's only met me I think twice. So he was having a conversation with somebody, and I just like did that Drew move where you just shoulder somebody out and you just insert yourself into the conversation. And I was like, John, I appreciate that you came to our tailgate, say hello to Drew and Iman, but I'm going to need you to leave because Drew is just going to take this nugget that you're here at his tailgate and just run with it for 6 months. John Fina came to my tailgate.
Well, like, but you know he's been here multiple times. Like, this isn't the first time.
I know.
Great. And every time you mention it.
Yeah, but
it
pumps your ego.
Did you know, Chris? By the way, Chris, did you know that Drew is a season ticket holder?
Oh, no, we're going to talk about that. Guys, you've already heard it. If you've listened to the 500th show, you've already heard our critique of this. He's not wrong. Ryan's not incorrect. I will say this about John. I irritate John to no end. John, there's something like I have the annoying little brother quality. He's told me this. And it's why we have the relationship that we do. I love that guy. He's like, I love you too. But also, sometimes I just want to he's like, I want to grab your head and just squeeze it. It's like, I understand. You're the only... I was like, I make a million people feel that way. You're the only person physically capable of doing it.
It's just, it's really cool, though, that, you know, you kind of... that he's that type of a cool guy. Because we've done a show with Thurman, too.
Yep.
And Thurman was that same way, right? Where he's just so down to earth. Like, he hung out with us the whole game and cheered, high five, fist bumped, and everything when
I remember
around like that is just so cool for like us as fans.
That game with Thurman, I scared the hell out of him because he was sitting there waiting for a drink from the bar, and the Bills like went for it on third and like
it was the Jets game. It was the season opener against
and it was
the Jets,
third and second, and Josh Allen overthrew a running back. And the noise that came, it was involuntary. The noise that came out of me was so, like, he just jumped and kind of turned and looked. He was like, what the fuck? Who's yelling like that in a bar? He didn't know me.
Yeah.
I felt bad. I was like, oh, no, I scared Thurman Thomas. Though the greatest tailgating year, though. I think, Chris, by far,
maybe
our best year for tailgating.
Yeah.
So huge shout out to everybody who came out this year. That day was one of my favorites, but this whole season has been one of the best, just in terms of turnout, attendance, the people we got to meet for the first time, the people we got to see.
Hopefully we get more next year, and then also more content creators come through, because like Brett and EJ, the offer's open.
It's out
there. If people are in town, you're Joe Marino's, You need a recording space the next day because he's on Locked On. He does that shit daily. Got a recording space. Let me help you out.
So, favorite game. Let's talk about games. Favorite game that the Bills won by less than a single score.
That's easy.
Chris, if you want to scroll up on this screen here that's on our monitor.
The tab that's open.
Yep, the tab that's open. Just go ahead and scroll up there for me.
Let's let Chris start.
The Baltimore game. That's mine because that was an away game, and I'm at work, and there's a guy on my crew that is a huge Ravens fan. So I was just giving.
So it's just the pettiness. Like it because there was someone in immediate arm's length that you could give.
I was giving him shit from the jump. He like because we get a break at 1 o'clock, and based on my job, I'm able to be in there a few minutes early. And he walks into the break room because we have a TV in our break room that watch the game. And he walks in, and I'm already in there. And I go, "Hey, D, just in time. You're about to see a beating of a lifetime." And then Josh Allen just immediately gets a tipped ball for a pick. Turnovers, and we're immediately down like 14, 20, what's it, 17 nothing?
17 nothing, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm like, shit.
Yeah, you probably walked out of there like, ah, fuck.
Yeah. Dude, well, by the end of the game.
Ryan, isn't that one of the worst feelings when you talk shit and then immediately your team tanks a little bit? You're like, oh no.
And tanks to a point where it's like, oh shit, this is going to be tough to come back from. Not like they went down 3-0 on the opening drive, right? But like 17 nothing quick. And you're like, oh fuck, that's a 3-score game.
You're like, well, this didn't go well. I better get back on my cart and mosey on out of here.
Well, I'm going to get back to work early, guys.
Let me hit that old dusty trail. I wish I could have seen you having to slink away down 17-0.
Oh, yeah.
Tail between his legs.
What about you, Ryan? What do you got? Single score game, your favorite? Miami.
Yeah.
Boom.
Yeah, I mean, it's the easy answer, but it's the right answer, right? Because, yeah. I mean.
Because what was at stake?
Because what was at stake, because of what had happened earlier in the season, because of kind of like the serendipitous nature of the weather, right? Like as soon as Buffalo starts their drive to tie it, the snow starts coming down. Well, that was all we heard about leading up to the game was how bad the weather was going to be and how Miami would have to adjust. And it was like,
it actually started to snow on Miami's last possession. That's my favorite game. My favorite one score game of the year was Buffalo-Miami. I got sick as hell. During the tailgate, I only had 5 drinks the entire day we were out there because I could just feel the illness just slowly taking me. Chris.
It was insane to get to your house at like 9:30 in the morning and you're completely fine. And then we get back to the house after the game, you know, after midnight, and you have no voice. You look like, I mean, God already did that to you. You already look like shit, but you look like even more shit.
Well, here was the worst. Sick. The him and Dan Kimball, who sits next to us in the stands, thought it was hilarious that I didn't have a voice by like, 5 minutes gone in the first quarter. Like I was just a rasp now because I'm sick and my voice is gone and going down. So Dan, then they Dan made Kimble. A game out of being like, oh, hey, guys, he's like, Drew, yell if you don't. He's like, yell if you don't love Dane Jackson. And because I can't make it, you know, he's like, do you hear that, guys? Drew loves Dane Jackson. He thinks he's killing it. And they were calling him Mr. Bean. They're like, we got Mr. Bean over here. You know. So the thing for me was falling asleep in a screen. The Bills have the football. And I'm like, let me just sit. Well, actually, Miami had the ball at the time. And I'm like, let me just sit down. And like an owl, I kind of pulled my hood down and closed my eyes. And was like, I'm just going to close my eyes for a second. And all of a sudden I wake up because everyone's screaming and I jump up and it's Josh Allen in mid-run for like that big 44-yard run of his.
Yep.
And I wake up and I'm like, woo! Been here the whole time, guys. This is great. High-fiving people. Yep. Was here. Saw it all. No idea what's going on. So watching that, not only knowing what I went through mid-game, but just knowing what was at stake and how the Bills in such dramatic fashion came back. That was a thing for me. And similarly to his, you know, he's talking about the Baltimore game. The thing that I think really iced it for me was telling the guy next to me who I sold the tickets to, and he's a listener, tailgater, I was talking to him and I'm like, this is the thing. Like, he's at first he's screaming because now I'm in and there's 5 minutes left and the Bills get the ball and the snow's driving. And he's like, we got to hurry up and score. And I'm like, you're an idiot. No, they're going to run this thing down. We've seen this movie before.
Yeah, yep.
I know what they're going to do. The thought is you don't get to touch it again.
Yeah.
Sorry. You fucked up. You fucked up your clock management and I'm going to eat this whole clock. You don't get to see the ball again. And when they got it down there, tell me that it's not nerve wracking the way McDermott goes. I trust these guys. So we don't need to. We're not going to kick it on third.
Yeah.
And leave a few seconds just in case. Nah, we'll take it all the way down to fourth with no time. Fuck him, I trust my guy.
Yeah, and they're not he's not the coach that, you know, they don't do the whole, like, where does Bass want to kick it from? So we'll take the sneak and, like, go off right tackle versus off left tackle. Like, it's just kind of like straight up football and, like, hey, if they break a touchdown run, we'll break it. And yeah, I mean, it was... It's just, you know, again, it was, you know, all we heard about was the weather in Miami. I wish it was colder with the shirt with McDaniel, right? And he's, you know, I mean, he's just such a, he's going to be a fun, like, foil to Belichick and everybody else in the division because he's just like a pinhead kind of guy, you know?
Yes.
He's easily, he has a punchable face.
Yes.
Easy to dislike.
Oh, my God.
And then for him to walk with the shirt. And Buffalo, again, I mean, it starts snowing very lightly just as Buffalo takes over. They drive down and Josh jumps, puts the ball over for the 2-point conversion. And it's like, it all opens up.
Yep.
It's like, hey, tie game. Now here we go.
Yeah. What do you have?
Exactly.
Oh, you don't have anything? Well, guess what? We win the game.
Did you have the same thing? Because you're one section over from us for seasons. Like, we watched the 2-point conversion.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, it's not in.
Oh no! So I was like the one guy in that was like, it's in, and I was yelling at everybody. We literally just watched this the other day with Mahomes because remember that was the same weekend that Mahomes did that.
Yep.
Where he went up over the top and he just did that and pulled it right back down, and I'm like, everybody's like, well, he dropped the ball, he didn't come down with it. I said, it doesn't matter. And we have to turn around to watch the Jumbotron, right, because of the way the stadium's oriented. Mm-hmm. So we turn around to watch the Jumbotron, and it's like, there it is, he's in. And it was, you know, you knew he was in as soon as they showed the replay. And it's just like, the entire stadium knew he was in. But there's always that inner monologue of Bills fans where it's like, how are they going to figure out how to screw us this time? Right? Like, he's clearly in, but how are they going to call this not in?
I'm like, they're going to fuck us.
Yeah.
I'm just waiting for them to figure out how. And they took a long time.
It took a long time. Especially because it was an untimed 2-point conversion. I'm like, what could they be talking about? It's not down in distance. It's not how much time's on the clock. All they need to do is, was he in or is he out? And we're kicking it. Like, that's...
You know what? I'm all fired up again. Can you hand me another one of these juice boxes? Hell yeah.
You don't dislike it too much.
Give me another juice box.
You want another one.
Give me another juice box here. Damn it.
What's the alcohol on it? Is it under 5%? I bet it's like 4.6.
It's very refreshing. I'll say that.
4.5.
4.5, so it's bottled water.
If it was a hot day, these actually would be a lot better. Like, I could see drinking this outside on a real hot day. Like, this actually might be pretty good. But the reason I ask you to give me another one is because the next question is, what's the game that left the worst taste in your mouth? Playoff loss notwithstanding. Now, Chris, what was the game you walked away from? We have them all up on the screen. The schedule's in front of us all. You look over those. What was the one outside of the Bengals game where you walked away from that just genuinely disgusted?
How is this not unanimously Minnesota?
Yeah.
Right?
I think we can go around the table.
Point. Yeah. It's absolutely Minnesota.
Because they were all self-inflicted wounds, all of them. Cam Lewis not swatting the ball, trying to pick it on fourth down.
I mean, the game was over.
You fumbled the ball on your own goal line. The pick in the end zone to end the game. It's like, how many times? How many times can you make?
And it's to me, it's like...
Oh, you made a whole season's worth of glaring errors in one game.
It's scheme. The way they take... The way they took that quarterback sneak. Like, if you watch Philadelphia... They go victory formation QB sneak.
Yes.
Buffalo doesn't. Buffalo goes single eye, and maybe they'll motion Gabe Davis in to get that push. If you're in victory formation quarterback sneak,
yes,
Buffalo probably gets that.
Oh, if you put Reggie Gilliam behind his ass and get him over?
Right, and at worst, it's a safety.
Yes.
Not a touchdown.
Not a touchdown.
Right.
So I'll say this. That game sticks out in my mind, and here's why. So some of you know I bought a new house. I moved back in October. That game was November 13th. So I've lived in my house for less than 45 days. That day, I left. I've talked about it on the show. That's me and Bridget in my truck. She got out. I took off before any traffic. I was home in 10 minutes. So I'm home. But Chris, I didn't have any windshield time. There's no time to like cool down. I just literally, like, Bridget just knew, she hugged me and just knew like I need to leave Drew alone. So she hops out of the truck and I peel out and I take off. I get home and I'm unpacking the truck angrily in the driveway. And that's the day my neighbors decided to come over and try to introduce themselves. To say that it didn't go well would be an understatement. It was the guy and his wife, and she actually did a lot of the talking. She came over and she was like, "Oh, hi, we live next door." To which my response was, "Okay, you want a cookie?" And it was all downhill from there, Ryan.
I could imagine.
Can you imagine? Chris, you get to see me here when we do this and I'm calmed down after a couple days. And you know that I can be a real dickhead about things.
You are a dickhead.
Imagine catching me. You've seen me in those moments.
Yeah.
You've been in the room with me when we lose a game like that. I'm insufferable, right?
Yeah.
Now imagine being someone who doesn't know me and walking headfirst into that wood chipper.
Yeah, that's...
Yeah, I mean, the part that gets me... The part that gets me about that game is it was done. It was over. You won it on a fourth down goal line stand. And if not for that game, you're the one seed.
Yep.
You draw Jacksonville. You draw the first round bye. And all of this nonsense about a coin flip, neutral state, neutral site, AFC, none of that comes into play.
Just don't fumble the fucking
football. That game was over.
You can all
and now you rip and you rip off and you go from 6-3 to 7-2, and you proceed to win every single game to close out the season.
You can also say that about the Dolphins game. What if that punt is 2 inches higher into that guy's asshole, and then that punt off the asshole is straight up in the air?
Yeah,
touchdown.
There were a number of instances, right, where there were things that happened where, you know, you want them back, right?
You could look at the Vikings and Dolphins game and
a couple
of changes, and it's
exactly And what game was it? It was the Jets game, right, where Gabe Davis, it was the fourth down.
Yep.
And Allen unforked it, right?
Yeah.
And he dropped it right through his hand. So there was that. There was
Shocker.
The Miami game.
Shocker.
But I think what sticks in your craw about the Minnesota game is it was over.
Yeah.
Like
the game was
over.
Won. You won the football game.
You had the ball with Minnesota had no timeouts left.
It's why I left.
Like, yeah.
Because I was like, the game was over and you gave it back to them. And now you have to go get it back. Now you have to go kick a field goal in order to have a shot at winning. You guys are assholes and I'm getting out of here.
Lisa, let me ask you this. Because that fumble in the Vikings game happened
right in front of us, yeah.
In our end zone.
I was
did you see Drew leave and go, "Oh good, we got this. Drew's leaving."
No, I don't tend to look for Drew too much. Like, I'll keep an eye out. I think I saw you once this season in stadium, right?
Thank God you and security.
So, but what I, you know, I was best case again. We all saw what happened, and I'm thinking worst case scenario, this is a safety and Buffalo's getting the ball back with the lead. Right, and they've just got to kill the clock a little bit differently, but the fact that it was the way it played out was just, you know, it hurt more than I think any loss outside of a playoff loss in the last decade that I can think of.
Yeah, that one that was a bad one.
That
hey,
minutes,
listen, cheers, put,
yeah.
cheers, fuck that game.
Yep,
let us never speak of it again.
You can fire that Minnesota game into the. Dallas Monday night game.
Into the asshole of the sun.
With the Dallas Monday night game.
Yes,
the
exactly.
Cleveland Monday night game.
The fucking New England
game. The Cleveland
game,
Monday. We don't talk about that.
The New England game last year.
Yeah.
Where
the win
where,
game.
They beat you with three passing attempts.
But I like that game because they came out so determined to whip their asses the next two that it made it good. I can at least look at that one. But these ones, I can't.
Yeah.
They go down in the lore of like the Jeff Toole, fucking Brandon Whedon Thursday night Bills Browns game. Like, we'd shut those in a vault.
Where the Jeff Toole cheat game.
We encased them in lead so that the radio activity
doesn't kill us. How differently does that all play? Like,
I know.
Yeah.
You're the one seed. You get Jacksonville. You beat the brakes off Jacksonville. Then you get Mahomes after beating Cincinnati on a bad ankle in Buffalo for the AFC title.
Trust me, I've already had these thoughts. It's why I got hammered the night before the AFC title game. I went down a rabbit hole of what ifs. I didn't like it. So the next day I was resolute that I was a KC guy. Let's talk about the players. Chris, you want to scroll down here for me? Scroll down just a little bit to where the statistics are. Yeah, let's stay right there for a second. Scroll up. Okay, let's leave it here for now. Your favorite off-season addition to the roster, Ryan?
Off-season addition?
The players we added this year, the new faces we brought to the roster, who was your favorite?
Nyheim Hines. I've been a Nyheim Hines fan since he to Indianapolis.
So here's the question, though. Was that based on potential or performance?
Oh, based on potential.
Okay.
It was based on what I thought they brought him in to do, which was be the punt returner, kick returner that could be a difference maker, versus what everybody else thought he was getting brought in to do, which was somehow be a part of this offense, and that just wasn't going to happen because you know it wasn't going to happen.
You mean sit on the bench?
But he was brought in to be a difference maker on special teams, and that's what. And I knew he could do it.
Did that or did that not win us a game?
Yeah. I mean, it absolutely won you a game.
Yeah, it did.
Chris, who do you got?
I mean,
Chris is like, I don't know. I don't know.
Well, no, it's how can you not go Von Miller?
Yeah.
I mean, a lot when he was on the team, pre knee injury, slit turf.
Yeah, I mean,
he was a game changer. He was a closer.
Think about Von Miller is you didn't bring him in to do what he did. Like, you brought him in to do what he did in the late end of the season playoffs, and he didn't get to do that.
He never got to showcase it.
I mean,
because that was the thing. You didn't even need him to be good during the regular season.
You literally
during the regular season, the Bills have won. It's the Bills and Chiefs in terms of who has the most regular season wins over the last two seasons. It's Buffalo and Kansas City. You already came into this season saying to yourself, "I probably don't even need Von Miller to win more regular season games than at least the playoff field worth of teams."
Well, you knew that because
I want him in the postseason,
right? And you knew that because when he got injured, that was the talk, right? Was
yep.
Because it was like, well, I'll be back, you know. Before they knew it was an ACL and he had to have surgery,
yep.
And to a man on social media, it was okay. So he misses the rest of the regular season. Who cares? We didn't get him for that. We got him for the playoffs.
For me, it was DaQuan Jones because he's everything we thought we were getting in Star Lotulelei. And I don't think we spent as much money.
Yeah.
I think he was cheaper than Star and yet worlds more effective. It's crazy to me to think that for all the time we've spent looking for a true, like, zero tech, guy who can play one tech, guy who can play, like, this space eater but still give you a little juice, DaQuan Jones comes in off the street and does it after years of watching fucking...
There you go, right here. Since you're just talking about his contract.
Yeah,
2 years, 14. So it was $7 million a year. Star Lotulelei had like a 5-year deal worth like $40 million. And he never lived up to it. Not for a second.
And it's a deal like that. You're not going to. It was like the Mario Williams deal, right? Like, he was never going to live up to that type of contract.
DaQuan Jones was the guy who unlocked everything around him. He had a Casey Hampton-esque effect on this defense. It's part of the reason that you saw the defensive transformation that we'll probably talk about here in a minute, but it's a lot of it comes with him just being the big body in the middle of your defensive line who is savvy enough to shove guys. Like, he knew when he could get some wiggle. He could find a little purchase, get into the backfield, cause a little havoc. At the same time, if he had to just manhandle a center and guard at the same time, fine.
Yeah.
Fine.
Yeah.
You rarely ever saw, like, how often did you hear his name be talked about negatively?
Right.
You never saw the man get pushed off his spot. That's it. He did the job.
Mm-hmm.
He did the job. And so for that, like, out of all the people we brought in, that we've brought in under Bean. Think about all the free agents we signed who didn't pan out.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Think about the last defensive line rebuild.
Yeah.
Daquan Jones. Fucking home run. Who's the worst new face?
Oh, man.
If you think about a new face that you're like, oh, man, what the fuck was this guy doing here? Can I give you guys mine?
Why don't you go ahead? Yeah, you go first.
Linebacker Terrell Bernard. Let's talk about, you have made fun of me in our group chat for 2 years now because I was making comments about the term hat on a hat. I was like, we don't need to sign that guy. That's hat on a hat. And now you never let me forget
Which I think was the reason I got on you so much was we don't need Julio Jones because we have Gabe Davis. Yeah, what do we need Julio Jones for? Hat on a hat.
Yeah. Well, they're not all winners over here. They're not all winners.
You want some context to your pick of Bernard when it comes to the draft. So the next pick that we took, or the next pick taken after Bernard, was Dylan Parham, guard to the Raiders, who started 17 games.
Yep.
And then six picks before Buffalo selected. I don't know how much you think the Bills had ammo to move up six picks, but the Eagles took N'Kobe Dean.
Yeah.
Six picks before Bernard.
No. This is what I hated about it. I go, who? Who the fuck is Terrell Bernard? And everyone goes, well,
it's the equivalent of your Devin Singletary take.
I go, you drafted
Lasel remembers that. Flip of the iPad and then face down like Ace Ventura in the psych ward.
So we literally watched the Bills bring in a linebacker who didn't play. He didn't play. And at the same time, they did so at a time when there were still wide receivers. The Chiefs took Sky Moore in the third round. There were still...
They tried to play him.
Well,
they tried to play him when Edmonds got hurt.
And you saw what that turned into.
Yeah.
And if anything, it just gave Edmonds more leverage in contract negotiations, which is fucking pathetic. I hate the fact that they spent a top 90 pick on a special teams player. Like, that's a luxury pick. That's a pick where you go, my roster's so set, I don't have to worry about anything. And we saw what this offense was this year. You need offensive line help. You need skill players. And yet, for some reason, this team, I want to say worst new face, it's not his fault, right? Mm-hmm. He never got any playing time. But also, who is he? You're going to start him over Milano? Over right. Edmonds? That pick right there is a microcosm of what's wrong with this team to this point. They have grossly neglected the offensive side of the ball at the expense of luxury picks on the defense because their attitude is, well, Allen will make it better.
Yeah.
And that's why I think he's the worst, because he represents everything that's been wrong with our approach for the last 3 years. It's been, hey, we got him one weapon. Cool. Does he have any first-round talent on offense around him? No. He's the only quarterback in the playoffs this season with no fellow first-round picks on offense. That's crazy.
Yeah.
And yet here we are.
It's Aaron Rodgers.
That's my point. Like, yeah. Look, how many Super Bowls has Aaron Rodgers won?
One.
Do we want to be the same franchise? Because if so, keep doing it the same way.
I mean, I'll take one at this point.
Terrell Bernard is your fucking poster child for it.
I got mine now.
Okay. 16. I want to read this from NFL.com. 16 games, one game started, 11 tackles, 11 assisted tackles, 7 solo.
And most of those tackles probably came on special teams.
Yes.
Yes. That's a stat. That's Bernard's stat line for this year.
Ryan, what do you got?
Jamison Crowder.
Oh, yeah, but that's not how much that's his fault.
That's injury.
I mean, sure.
True.
I mean, but at the same time, he was brought, again, we're talking about the what's wrong with the approach of this team, and you know, we didn't need to bring back a slot guy because we had Jamie. We didn't need to bring back Beasley because we had Crowder and we had McKenzie, and that them coupled with Davis, Diggs, Knox, that was going to be enough. It was going to be enough weaponry, right? And Crowder came in. It was underwhelming. He had a ball. It was a game he got injured, right? It was maybe the third game of the year. He had a ball go off his face mask and got intercepted. He never really worked his way into the lineup because he was in and out during training camp. He was in and out during preseason. He never really kind of got on the field to where he should have been.
It
was a one-year deal. So what was it all for, right? Like, cool. You could say, I mean, he's going to be like, he's going to be that guy where it's just, it's going to be, oh, did Jamison Crowder play for the Bills? Like, that's what it's going to be, his stop here in Buffalo. A literal cup of coffee that you could drink with one finger because the rest of your fingers are hurt.
I have one, but I don't because it's related to the coaching staff. I think why James Cook didn't get on the field. Worse new face.
Well,
he was underutilized.
Well, and that leads us to our next one. Biggest missed opportunity on offense for the 2022 Buffalo Bills.
James Cook.
Mine was Shakir not getting more snaps. And here's, let me spell this out for you. The whole regular season, the Bills were, I don't want to say married, but married to this idea of Isaiah McKenzie. It's almost like the movie Mean Girls.
Yeah, welcome.
Where it's like, stop trying to make Isaiah McKenzie happen. It's not going to happen.
Yeah, welcome to my side.
He is, it's like as the kids say, he ain't it. Like, that's it. Negative, well, let me throw some numbers at you, Chris. Negative 0.3 average yards after the catch above expectation, which shows that beyond his final initial catch point, he generated negative yards after the catch on the whole. The lowest yards after catch per reception of any wide receiver on the roster who actually caught a pass. The lowest air yards, average depth of target of any wide receiver on the roster. So here's a guy who you can't throw to. Ryan, think about this. Down the field, you have a quarterback with a cannon arm. You're going to take your primary slot weapon and you're going to fill it with a wide receiver who doesn't run a lot of great routes, so he's not going to get separation in zone. He is only going to run shallow routes. And once you give him the ball, he's still not good enough to actually create after the catch. And yet you're going to let him maintain the majority snap share all season long at the slot receiver. You look at Shakir, one-third of the snaps of McKenzie, but caught half the yardage he did on a quarter of the targets. Then the playoffs roll around and McKenzie's not around. Okay? McKenzie's not available for the playoffs. You have to start him. You have to start Khalil Shakir for the first time in weeks. And he has a pretty solid game. Mm-hmm. Gets yards after the catch, getting open downfield for deep passing attempts.
I mean, he had that catch.
That third and one catch.
Yeah, where he went up and got it.
He also had that drop.
Well, the drop. Let's talk about that because this is where I get pissed off about this. If he catches that deep pass, he's 4 for 4 with about 80 yards receiving on the day. The offense was more effective down the field with Khalil Shakir in the slot. They were a more dynamic team with him on the field. And yet you look at that and you say, oh, I wish you didn't drop that ball. What the fuck do you want the guy to do? He has 25 targets all season long. He's a rookie drafted in the 5th round. You needed to give him some targets, give him some time to get up to speed so that if you were ever going to have to rely on him, he had some fucking confidence. He had some experience. Instead, you said, no, let's just trot McKenzie out here to get 10 yards a week. The fuck is that? I want to know who made that call if we're talking about this.
You know, we could discuss this, I think, over the course of the show. Remember when we hired McDermott and you did that snap count for rookies?
Yes.
And how rookies weren't getting snap counts?
Never.
Now that we're good, you might want to switch that up and start giving your rookies some looks.
Ryan, biggest missed opportunity on offense?
Biggest missed opportunity on offense was thinking that Gabe Davis would be a sufficient number two wide receiver and leaving two names specifically on the board to take Kyir Elam as another corner that you arguably didn't need at the time.
And then didn't use.
George Pickens and Christian Watson.
Okay.
Imagine Stephon Diggs opposite Christian Watson or George Pickens and letting Davis work in the slot where he's actually successful.
I actually have a note about this right here in my notes. Gabe Davis's slot utilization, more than 500 of his yards came from the slot. Two touchdowns.
Is that 99 on one touchdown?
Yes. Highest grade as a wide receiver from the slot. Yet the Bills only utilized him there 10% of the time. Chris.
Because until you brought back John Brown, who was going to play outside?
But then you brought back John Brown. Didn't you put Gabe Davis back? Look, this is what I say. I say this constantly. I am an asshole. I'm some idiot with a beer in my hand and a PFF subscription. I shouldn't know more about how players are best utilized than the fucking offensive coordinator. And it's right there in front of your face for the guy's entire career. He drops 10% of his passes for his career. He's best used in the slot. Mm-hmm. One, don't make him a focal point of your offense. He's a bit player. Two, use him in the role he's most effective. And yet everyone else knows better than me. Millionaires know better than me. And it's enraging. Chris, what do I have to do? I already have a podcast. Do I have to drive past Dorsey's house with a fucking megaphone? I will find
it. Actually, you know what? This? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
You know what the funny thing? What you should do is set up the pod outside of Dorsey's house and just point the speakers.
No, what I should do is get the microphones. Except instead of feeding them into the mixer, we drive it external to a giant pair of like monitors. And I park my truck out in his driveway and we do a podcast about all the ways Gabe Davis needs to be used.
It's almost like they...
Till he calls the cops and has us removed.
It's almost like they have this mindset that because Allen became more than anyone thought he would be, that somehow these other offensive weapons are going to be more than what they are, right? Like, we're just going to move Davis outside. He's big. He can high point. Like, he'll be a good outside receiver. He's never been that, but he'll change into it. Like, McKenzie's never been anything more than a gadget guy. He's 27 years old. Let's convert his position and start giving him 10 touches a game, right? Like, because that's all of a sudden going to start happening. It just boggles my mind that they're approaching things so antiquated in the way they try to do things.
Now, this has been a very negative run of the podcast. Let's switch gears here. Let's talk about some of the best decisions on defense and offense this season. What was your favorite defensive development this year?
The defensive line. The fact that it was a glaring need after last year to not only stop the run, but be more chaotic around the quarterback. Not necessarily get to the quarterback, just be more chaotic around the quarterback. And they went out and got the guys to do that. Jordan Phillips, right? Like Shaq Lawson. Like, these aren't guys that are going to be world beaters, but they're guys that are going to make an impact, and they're going to make shit difficult for the offensive line.
Oh, for sure.
And you don't need to sack Mahomes 7 times.
No, you just
need to create chaos, get him off his spot, make him throw unscheduled passes.
Look at the play that cost them the Kansas City game earlier in the season.
Mm-hmm.
You had Von Miller comes around the edge. Matt Milano comes on a delayed blitz.
Yep.
And so Patrick Mahomes off the snap knows I've got to drift away from my left tackle because Von Miller's coming.
Yeah.
Then Matt Milano on the delayed blitz. Now I have to roll even farther to my right. Let me see if I can fire this ball into space. Oh shit, there's a Teron Johnson there.
Yeah.
End of the game.
Yeah.
Done.
Yeah, and it's been you and I have talked about it a lot in the group chat, right? Like, it's been a mindset of mine for a while. I've shifted to you have to get to the quarterback, to you don't have to get to the quarterback. You just have to create chaos around them. You have to get them uncomfortable.
Get them off his platform.
Don't let them stand. I mean, how many
times.
Look
at you using football jargon.
I mean, how many times did we sit there and watch Brady, right? Just do that little jump up and down back there, having a cup of coffee, whatever he wanted. It's like, get him off his spot, make it so he can't time his routes, he can't throw before the guys are looking at him, and, you know, make him go improvise. And if you can go improvise and your guy's better at doing it than my guy is, then great. But my guy's pretty damn good at it in Allen.
My favorite was almost echoing what you said, but I'll drill into it a little bit deeper. Finally making a meaningful investment and an investment that worked in our defensive tackle position.
Yeah.
Because you want to talk about why we were so good at making a mess of pockets. It's because teams had to double team the left side. And now, like in the past, we could never take advantage of that. You go back to 2020. we go on a defensive line spending spree. We bring in Vernon Butler.
Vernon Butler.
We bring in Quinnen Jefferson. We bring in all these guys that I think we signed three defensive tackles that year.
Mm-hmm.
And with that, it bugged me that none of them were really truly effective.
Yeah.
And we ended up losing most of them except for Vernon Butler. And it was weird that he survived. Like, you would have thought Quinnen Jefferson was the guy they kept. They kept Vernon Butler for another year into 2021, but none of them ever panned out. 2020, it didn't go well.
Mm-hmm.
2021, your run defense was porous and you had no pass rush presence from the interior of the line. 2022, you had third stringers, guys like Brandon Bryant and Eli Ankoo, making plays for you. Real legitimate plays. Jonathan Kingsley.
Yeah.
Kingsley Jonathan, that was it. He had that game against the Bears where even though he was offsides on that one that he batted down, like, he knows where the game gets played, and these are practice squad players. So you looked at this season, you saw our linebackers making plays all over the field all of a sudden. It's not by mistake. It's because our tackles are keeping them clean. It's crazy to me, and you watch the statistical jump. We became the fifth-ranked run defense this year. The Bills, under Sean McDermott, haven't been a good run defense until now.
No, and you shored up the middle of the defense. You got a defensive end who finally, in running downs, can set an edge in Shaq Lawson, which he's always been great at. And you started to see that you brought in these veteran guys who all do things really well, like Von Miller get to the quarterback, Shaq Lawson set an edge, like, you know, Daquan Jones, Phillips, like creating habits in the middle.
There were times where Phillips, something I'm sure we'll talk about next in the coming weeks with Paul Wineski of Hashtag Sports when we talk about salary cap stuff. There was plenty of times this year where me and my buddies would be texting back and forth talking about how Phillips is playing like the player we wanted Ed Oliver to be.
Yeah.
Like, Ed Oliver didn't have a bad season, but Phillips, when he was healthy, was impressive.
Yeah, and you started to see, because of that veteran presence and those things that those guys do well, Rousseau started to do that stuff really well, like, a lot better. Basham came along and did things better. I think we learned enough about Epinesa to probably say that he's going to be gone after his first contract is done, if not called before that.
Called it.
Yeah, so, you know,
real pumped I derailed the whole podcast.
I think they did. You know, they did a really good job on the defensive front, and I don't think you can make the argument that they did very many things well that worked out in the last offseason.
No,
it was like James Cook and the defensive line, and that's about the extent of what they did. Yeah.
I saw a tweet from Bill's Chat Podcast. Got it here in my notes. So let's take a look at Sean McDermott's history of firing coordinators. The Bills fired Rick Dennis in 5 days after the 2017 season ended. The Bills fired Danny Crossman 4 days after the 2018 season ended. The Bills season ended 9 days ago. I guess they're running it back. Now, considering head coaches have now been hired and are already amassing their own staffs, the odds that the Bills do any major shuffling of this coordinator group, probably not going to happen.
Yeah.
Could be here. Underneath. Who was Chad Hall interviewing with?
Baltimore.
Yeah. Maybe if we get...
A wide receiver coach could become a need.
Yeah.
Although, you can look at the development of the wide receivers aside from Stephon Diggs and you go, all right, well...
Yeah, like, oh darn.
Like, they love him. They think he's a good coach, but couldn't we get better? I mean, look, we thought we were getting better with Aaron Cromer.
Maybe he needs to go to a beach this summer and fight a family.
Over some lawn chairs or beach chairs.
Maybe that's what we need.
That's going to be me, depending on how this draft goes. Depending on how this Bills offseason goes, I could see myself just whooping up on a bunch of teenagers over some beach chairs.
It's a reminder for everybody out there that is on Twitter. Please tag us at Rockpile Report when you find anything related to hand size or a mock draft.
Oh, my God.
Oh, don't worry. I've got the group chat on lockdown when it comes to the hand size. Measurement day.
It's ridiculous. It's one of the most frustrating things. What would you say? Because everyone's been down on these guys. I want to talk about their successes. What would you think? Like, what justifies each one of them returning? If we had to find a silver lining for each one of these coordinators,
you're asking me, the guy that went off on Twitter the night of the loss.
Exactly. That's why I think this is a perfect question. Find a silver lining for the return of these coordinators?
Dorsey, his first time he's called plays, so I think you could make the argument that he'll get better next year.
You're talking about next year, and I hate to cut you off. I know it's rude. I know it's a dickhead thing to do, but I think we've established.
It's your show.
I think we've established I am an asshole, and I will do that. What I think is, I think people lose sight of is that when Allen was a rookie, Allen got a pass for his ability to run an NFL offense, and he got better down the stretch, but not great. They still lost a game or two. They finished the season pretty strong. They won like four of their last six, I think. But didn't Brian Daboll also kind of get a pass in his first year here in Buffalo?
Yeah.
Because
there was a rookie quarterback.
Because there was no expectation.
Yeah.
Ken Dorsey, if I'm trying to make myself feel better about this, it's the idea that Brian Daboll already was an offensive coordinator for two other football teams. Never mind, he got Brady Quinn twice. That's not his fault. Like, when that happens to you, it's literally like you getting hit in an intersection and then someone rear ends you at the same time. Like, what? Or, like, you see those videos where there's a car accident and there's people out, like, helping on the side of the road, and then another car just piles in there. That's what it is to get Brady Quinn twice in a career. So I don't fault him for a lot of that, but he did have previous play calling experience, a lot of it. And he still got a pass for that first year here in
Buffalo.
Yeah,
and I think it's like the analogy of like at work, right? Like, you've got this guy who's really good at his job, and then he leaves. And you've got all of his equipment. You know he used Excel. You know, like, what he did used to do his job. And you just hand it to the new guy, and it's like, do his job. Like, this is everything he had. You just go do the job as good as he did. And that's, I think that's what people thought they were getting in Dorsey.
Was a guy
who could just pick up the exact same offense that Daboll just ran and run it the exact way that Daboll ran it and be as effective. Wasn't going to happen.
Who was the, after Ted Marshall-Broda left, who was the Bills offensive coordinator? I know we invoked his name at least once or twice in this podcast.
No one knows that.
Anyone? Hey, guys, call in if you know.
I mean, I'll look.
First time, long time.
First time.
I'll hang up and listen.
I'll look it up and let you know.
I don't know about anybody else listening, but I do that all the time when Drew says that on the show. It's usually my knee-jerk response where I just go, first time, long time.
First time, long time. Realistically, it didn't go as well as we would have liked. And I think that what we saw from Ken Dorsey was just... Yeah, I remember talking about how he was doing so many cool RPO things at the beginning of the season. When we were blowing people out over the first few months, it seemed like every game he had a new... You could hit that button that says more team info. Tom Bresnahan.
Yeah, Bresnahan.
All right, so we expected him to be Bresnahan, taking over in 92. Realistically... That was he stepped into big shoes and he didn't swim in them. So I guess what I'm saying is here, like, I'm looking at this and I'm like, over the first month of the season, he was just on fire. But then as people got the book on him, he didn't have a quality pivot. He didn't learn how to take off from here and go somewhere else. He didn't learn how to do the same things out of different formations. And he kind of did in a game or two, but real, like, we saw it in the Bears game. Right, they ran. There was a couple of the Josh Allen bootleg for a touchdown late in the game happens because they ran with a quarterback sneak out of the same formation they ran up the gut earlier in the game. That's great within a vacuum, but over the course of game to game to game, it's almost like he had to throw out everything he had done before and come up with something brand new.
Yeah,
I think as he gets older and more mature as a play caller, he's going to find out. I could still use those RPO, like, okay, teams aren't giving, they saw how badly I whipped up on Tennessee, how we just threw the RPO free release. Anytime they were going to give a 6 yard cushion to Stephon Diggs, it was a pass to the outside.
Yeah.
And he'd get me 6-7 yards. Teams caught on to that and stopped giving it to me. Mm-hmm. I can't ever go back to the well. It's like, no, you could just get another receiver to fill that role.
Mm-hmm.
He has to learn that, but I think he can. Will he? I don't know. But I think that it's to say, like, oh my God, we need a new play caller right now. Did I feel that way when the season? Of course, because I was hostile and I'm overreactionary like nobody's business. I think that you can make a case that this is salvageable. And not only is it salvageable, but he can grow from this. Leslie Frazier is a harder one to find a silver lining for the way this played out.
Yeah, I mean, Frazier is who he is, right?
It's not going to change. You can't teach an old... They say you can't teach an old dog new tricks. You can't teach an old dog that old new tricks.
I mean, especially a guy
that
who's been...
That dog's laying under the porch. He's got nothing left.
Especially a guy who's been as successful as he's been and as long as he's been in the NFL, right? Like, I mean, this is what's got him there. I think for Frazier, what I would look at is from a scheme perspective, like, you know what you're going to get. You're going to get a defense that you're going to be able to go out and win 13, 14 games with. You're going to have a defense, regardless of personnel, regardless of how good they are against the run, how good they are in individual aspects of the game. He's always had a defense that's going to go out and keep you in football games. And if you can stay in football games with a quarterback like Josh Allen, you're going to win more than you lose. That being said... My hope is that between him and McDermott, they will figure out how to coach in high pressure close games.
They
have to figure that out because they.
What is it now?
Sean McDermott
given up 130 something points in the last four playoff games, and yet they go into every postseason with a top 10 defense.
Yeah,
it's like you pad your stats against bad teams. But eventually, you're going to play the elite of the elite.
Well, the problem is,
the
problem is that they run these schemes where they clearly trust their players, right? All season.
Yep.
They trust their players. They'll man-to-man, Trey on an island, up in their face, let them press and push. Then they punt in these critical situations because they trust their defense. But they don't trust their defense enough to not play 12 yards off the ball on third and four.
Hand me a juice box. I'm all fired up about this now.
Like, you either trust Thank your you. Players or you don't trust them, right? And if you trust them, then play what got you there. Do what got you there. And they don't do that in the postseason. My hope is that eventually Sean McDermott will wake up and say, I don't want my name whispered in the same breath as Marvin Lewis.
Well, exactly.
Because that's what he's going to be if this goes on for maybe two more seasons?
Yeah.
So my hope is, the good thing is, again, the good thing is defensively, you're going to have a defense that keeps you in enough games where Josh Allen's going to go out and will you to a win. Hopefully the offense takes another step. You go out and you just start bludgeoning people like you did last year. Just sustain it. And then they can carry that into the playoffs. Although being optimistic about McDermott and Frazier evolving as coaches is a little bit more short-sighted than doing it about Dorsey, because Dorsey has excuses for why he is what his shortcomings were this year.
It is funny that you're talking about this, and I'm looking at the screen that Crystal has up. 1991, the Buffalo Bills, 13-3. They lose to the Redskins in the Super Bowl. Ted Marchibroda, offensive coordinator, hot name, goes on to be a head coach. Defensive coordinator, Walt Corey. Who the fuck is Walt Corey? That defense was so talented, it didn't fucking matter.
Mm-hmm.
And the offense was so talented, it didn't fucking matter. It just didn't matter. You knew that team was going to win because their offense was great. And that's what the Bills are in the regular season. They need to find a way to make that count in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Player superlatives before we get out of here. First of all, rookie of the year. Can we all go around here and just... Is it James Cook?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
Let's not waste everyone's time.
Next question.
You've got better at the running back position and made a guy who was probably going to cost a decent amount of money expendable.
RB1 next year?
Yeah.
Oh, that's going to be a fun discussion.
Cook and Hines. Season.
Cook and Hines?
Yep.
Right. I mean, what are you?
They're both under contract already, and they don't cost much.
Yeah, Hines is a little bit.
Well, I've been on the thing.
No restructure.
I've been on the thing since we drafted Singleton.
I'd extend him for four more years and then restructure and be like, listen, you'll retire a bill. We're never paying you more than $1 million.
I mean, Hines is only 26. Don't forget that. I mean, he's the same age as Allen.
So. I've been on the thing.
What?
Yeah, Naheem Hines, he's only 26.
Oh, wow.
Jesus.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but I thought he was old.
No.
Jesus.
He's been in the league for... I think this is his fifth year.
Like, that's what I was going to say. Is he like Edmonds?
He's like Edmonds. Like, yeah, where like Edmonds is still younger than some of the guys that are eligible for this year's draft.
Stetson Bennett, although...
No, like Herndon Hooker.
I was going to say, stop drinking in public.
Like Herndon Hooker, who legit was, he was the guy, the quarterback, right? He's older than...
It's volunteers.
Than Edmonds.
Yeah.
Is it bad?
This is probably the last year you can say that about Edmonds.
Well, also, is it bad that I'm over here trying to... like I was about to start making fun of Stetson Bennett for getting like drunk in public. I think I'm the last person who can criticize anybody else for being intoxicated.
Listen, just because you didn't get arrested and cited for it doesn't mean that you're better than him for it.
Defensive player of the year, Matt Milano.
Oh, it has to be.
Yeah.
Again, unanimous choice. All pro, first time in his career. Pro bowler for the... How crazy is it that he was an all-pro but didn't make the Pro Bowl?
Yeah, I mean, now he's got the same accolades as Tyler Huntley.
So good for him. Like, this is the thing. So Brett Coleman goes on every show, everywhere around the country, and just talks every year about defensive player of the year who will never get votes, Matt Milano. And that's how he, like, talks about him. This year, seeing him be voted all-pro... I think it's
validation.
It's validation for him. He's earned every bit of it. He was one of our most dynamic defensive players. Also, it's a complete joke that he made the All-Pro before the Pro Bowl.
Yeah.
It goes to show you how much weight that carries.
The Pro Bowl's a joke.
Like, that's a mess.
For years.
Yeah. I'm just happy he's finally getting the shine he deserves because he's been one of the best linebackers in football. Mm-hmm. He's the guy who, if you're an offensive coordinator... It's not Tremaine Edmonds you game plan for. It's Matt Milano because he comes on the blitz, but he also erases your tight end. And you go, well, I don't know what he's going to do. So we have to scheme against him specifically.
Yeah.
Offensive player of the year who isn't Diggs or Allen.
Who isn't Diggs or Allen.
Yep.
That's a good one.
Yeah, because low hanging fruits. I was about to say something controversial. It's for people who don't, like, I don't know, have a little creativity.
So the way he finished down the stretch, Dawson Knox.
All right.
Because he, you know, everyone was kind of waiting, and he had his best games down the stretch when they needed someone to step up other than
I think it's
Diggs.
Fair.
Or you can just go back to James Cook.
James Cook kind of, yeah, I mean, he was, I think if they would have given him more run, Early in the year when they should have, I think definitely for him. But, I mean, don't forget, Dawson Knox finished the last six games of the season with a touchdown.
Well, that's
a pretty big deal.
Well, that's why I wanted him to leave these stats up here. Look at this. So, right here, Dawson Knox finishes with 517 and six tutties. He had one going into like week 10.
I was going to say, if you would go to the game, and don't do it, but if you were to go to the game splits, I would venture a guess that the vast majority of that output came the last five games of the year.
Yeah, exactly. Gabe Davis had most of his production early and then just kind of...
Yeah, I mean, I can't vote for Gabe Davis because that's not what 48 for 836 well, and 7 isn't what he should have done in that position. You're Josh Allen's number two target and you finish with 48, 836 and 7. That's
Here's where we go. Least valuable player. If you had to name an LVP.
Spencer Brown.
That's a good pick.
Can I say Spencer Brown?
Yeah, that's a good pick.
I mean, Spencer Brown was
I would have gone way off the board and said Drew.
Well, that's.
But he's not on the 53.
I mean, Spencer Brown was better last year than I think he should have been because he was a rookie.
Is that coaching?
This year, he was far worse than what he should have been based on his development. He was at best, a turnstile most of the season. And down the stretch, he was worse than that because he was a turnstile where, like, the spring was broken inside of it. So at least turnstiles are kind of like you got to give them a little something, you know, to move them. This one, it was just like you would push it and it would just, like, spin until somebody grabbed it. It was almost like a perpetual motion machine. He was so bad. He was awful.
Okay. Yeah, we thought he would have,
like,
benefited from having Cromer come on board.
Yeah, like, you would think going into this season that you look at it and you go, okay, so going into next year, you know, you've got to figure out a replacement for Morse, and you might have to figure out something for Saffold because he's not but the rest of the offensive line is set, right? Brown, Bates, and Dawkins, those three positions are good. Now you legitimately look at it and go, they're going to have to address tackle in the offseason, and that wasn't something coming into this year that I thought would be talking about going into next year.
So Spencer Brown finishes the season with 42 pressures allowed. Next week, we talked about this in the show last week.
42 pressures allowed.
42 pressures.
So that's over three a game.
And the worst part is that he gave up just as many he gave up more down the stretch than he did to start the season.
Oh, absolutely he did.
So when Brandon Bean comes out in his postseason presser at the end of the year and goes, Well, just like Spencer Brown, I think the arrow is up on Ken Dorsey. And I was like, don't lump them together. Don't do that, because we know we're not idiots. One of them is terrible. One of them finished terribly. Stop trying to window dress this. Spencer Brown's a good pick for that. I'm torn between Roger Saffold, who keeps betting on people, saying on Twitter, he's like, well, you all don't know, blah, blah, blah. It's like, no, I have. I've watched terrible offensive lines. I do know. You are a mediocre offensive lineman. How do I know? I'm a connoisseur. Like,
of mediocre offensive line play.
I am a sommelier of
I've been watching mediocre offensive line play for decades.
I'm a sommelier at this point.
I used to wish for mediocre offensive line play, sir.
Sir, I will have you know. I show him my badge. Like, yeah. I have one of those stupid medallions those sommeliers wear around their neck.
I have a certificate.
I have a degree on the wall that says that I am a sommelier of crap offensive line. I know mediocrity when I smell it, and you were it, sir. And I hate the fact that we paid as much as
he's
we
a Pro Bowler.
For. Oh my fucking god! Here we go, him and Tyler Huntley.
Where's your Pro Bowl, Drew?
If it wasn't for the fact that Matt Milano was getting his due this year, I'd fucking kibosh the whole thing. I would shit all over the whole exercise. But I like the fact that Matt Milano is finally getting his.
I like that. Allen's shitting over the whole thing.
Of course he is.
Oh, no, I'm going to go play in the Pro-Am at Pebble Beach.
Oh, my shoulder hurts. Fun. My shoulder hurts. Let me go play some golf.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, my elbow's bothering me, but I'm going to go hit some links instead.
Speaking of elbow bothering you, is Brock Purdy, is his injury not the saddest? Like, if we want to talk about the saddest injury, it's Von Miller's knee, saddest injury for the Bills 2022, by far.
Absolutely.
Or at least for the Bills. For the NFL as a whole, like in terms of stories, Brock Purdy comes out like a house on fire with a good team, like he was a game manager. But you're Mr. Irrelevant. No one expected you to ever see a field.
That injury ruined the title game.
And you come out in a game where your team is so good that they probably still have at least a puncher's chance against the Eagles.
It was 7-7 with Josh Johnson at quarterback.
And now he needs Tommy John. The kid's going to lose all of next year. Plus, probably the rest of that offseason.
Did that change? I thought he was out 6 months.
Nope. Changed today. They announced that he's going to need Tommy John surgery.
Yeah, they thought initially they knew it was torn, but they weren't sure whether
they thought he got the Allen
result.
They thought it was the Allen result where it was like, because you saw that.
I think I did see it's fully torn. He's going to need Tommy John. They're saying 6 months. But I think it's 6 months before he's kind of like able to get throwing again.
Yes.
Which is the issue.
So the whole idea is you're going to do surgery. They said it's a year before you can resume football activity. Yeah. So you tack on a month or two to that. What happens?
Yeah. And I mean, the problem is with guys like that, like by the time he's able to start playing again, he's not going to be under contract, probably.
No.
And
he's a seventh round pick.
How many people are going to give him a shot? You know, it's.
I just feel terrible for him. I really.
You don't feel terrible for Kyler Murray tearing his ACL?
No. Fuck him.
I mean, that might have been for him. I mean, to be fair, for him, that might be like living the dream, right? You just signed this giant contract. Now I get to play Call of Duty all the time.
Okay. Do you want to hear my. One, two, three, four, five, my sixth beer conspiracy theory.
Yeah, go ahead.
Six beers deep conspiracy theory. I wish we had dramatic music, but we don't. I think him and Cliff Kingsbury just Ocean's 11, the Arizona Cardinals.
Oh, like they're trying to take him down from the inside?
Well, I think it was one of those things where they colluded together. They were like, listen, let's get our contract extensions. Let's listen. I'm going to take you number one overall. We're going to play the long game. We're not going to be very good.
But
get us to that second contract. And the second that there's any guaranteed money tied to this, we both get the fuck out of here. I'll see you on the beach.
Well, that's the thing.
And
like,
then they all get together like the Shawshank Redemption down on some beach somewhere. And and what makes me think is Cliff Kingsbury got a contract extension, proceeds to get fired, immediately fucks off out of the country. He doesn't want retribution. He doesn't want to fix his name. Like, to be like, I want to. You watch a lot of these coaches go, I got to salvage my legacy. I'm going to come back and prove to everybody that I'm a sound offensive mind. You watch offensive coaches get fired and immediately rehired as coordinator somewhere else. He purposely told people, not open for business, going to the beach. He literally was like, oh, they just paid me a giant contract. He knows he got dicked around.
And he has...
The guaranteed portion of that contract is sizable.
And he has...
His net worth right now without the contract is still $15 million.
And he has the charisma and the looks to go do an analyst.
Whatever.
He can be an analyst if he wants.
He could be a motivational speaker. Some asshole out there is going to listen to him.
Or worst case scenario, he would be the most sought after head coaching candidate in college football. If he were to go, I'm going to go back to college.
Like, look at Chris. If he had a fraction of Cliff Kingsbury's money and just a little bit of his charisma, he could be a motivational speaker.
You know what? You're an Alabama fan.
Yes.
Nick Saban comes out at the end of the year and goes, I'm done. You want Cliff Kingsbury?
100% they would
Absolutely.
Call him. They would call him.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
This is my point.
Cliff Kingsbury or Dabo.
So Kingsbury goes.
For Alabama.
I did the thing. I was the shittiest head coach of all time. I was the shittiest head coach in recent history who made the most fucking money. And guess what? My kids won't remember it. My wife won't give a shit. We took a lot of cool vacations. And I'm going to do whatever the hell I want.
And look at the house I live in.
Look where I live. Chris, you thought that house in Arizona was extravagant? You think he's not going to go buy some other James Bond villain house?
I would say wait until he goes to be the head coach at USC.
Yeah.
No, you know who he is he's going to end up being the new Jim Mora Jr.
I really think that they Ocean's 11'd the fucking Arizona Cardinals this year.
Do you know?
Somehow they hoisted these guys. I can't get it.
Do you know about Jim Mora Jr.?
Nope.
I'll pull up his Wikipedia. He has this thing here. See this here? Look at these. Look right here. In his coaching career, see this gap?
Yep.
9-12 and then 17-21. You know why there's those gaps?
Why?
Because that's when his contract ran out.
Oh, so he just collected his money
yep. and didn't work.
Yeah.
He did that twice between Seattle and UCLA, and then when he got fired from UCLA and went to UConn.
Hey, guys, raise a glass because that's the fucking American dream right there.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's the American dream in action.
Yeah, because don't forget those college contracts, if you sign with another team,
it's automatically offset.
It's offset. So unless that team's going to pay you more than you would have gotten and actually do work.
He got fired from UCLA and didn't work for 4 years because that was what was left on his deal.
He signed that probably an 8-year, 10-year deal, right?
Yeah.
With UCLA.
And then he went to that. That's what Kingsbury's going to do. You won't see him for like 4 years.
The last question before we close this podcast. Every year at the end of at this point in the season, we get another morose soundbite from Sean McDermott. You know, you are who you are in the final game and blah, 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 blah.
Coach speak.
Do you feel like maybe this, after everything that went on this year and the way that, do you think maybe this will be the year where he finds a way to put it all together when it actually matters?
I'm not going to hijack your podcast any more than I already have. At Ryan Lacel _RSN on Twitter, I have made my thoughts about McDermott very well known and how I feel about McDermott moving forward. So I will not hijack your podcast. I'll let you and Chris take this question.
Chris, do you think this is finally because how many more atrocities? Like his own players. He's got Isaiah McKenzie talking to the media going, why does this keep happening to us? He's like, I don't know. Why does our team keep falling on its face in the most pivotal moment? Like, players are starting to question, why are we never as prepared as we need to be? Why are we never as aggressive? Whether it's mentally, emotionally, we're not ready for the moment. Why does this keep happening to us?
McDermott is here until that locker room has done a heel turn.
Well, so here's the question. Do you think that this is a very pivotal year for Sean McDermott in regards to that aspect right there?
If next year we are out in the divisional round, championship game, or Super Bowl as losers, McDermott will still be back here. Coordinators might change, but McDermott's definitely going to be back.
Okay.
What's the line for you?
What it's going to take is
a mutiny,
a missing the playoffs and mutiny within the locker room where they're no longer buying.
But here's the thing, for you, it's missing the playoffs because for you personally, your attitude is, well, as long as we're making it, it's fine. What about the guys who are sacrificing their bodies to make it there? The fact that they're already questioning the direction of things. They're already questioning what's going on back there. If Isaiah McKenzie's saying it to the media, you know that there's
fuck
more
him. He's not here.
But you know
he's not going to be here.
But if he's willing to say it to the media, you know there's more being said behind closed doors than that. I mean, we caught a glimpse of that in the aftermath of that Cincinnati game against Kansas City, where Jermaine Pratt's walking off the field and he's literally walking into the locker room, yelling about Osai. How the fuck are you going to hit that guy out of bounds? There's a lot more that gets said in the locker room and behind the scenes than what we hear. And the fact that we're hearing this from not one, but like a couple players, where they're just expressing almost like they're incredulous that this could be happening to us over and over and over again. At a certain point, that's going to get louder. I feel like...
I think as an organization,
you're entering a very pivotal territory in a time in Sean McDermott's tenure.
Yeah, I mean, as an organization,
2022 is fine. All these people calling for him to be fired right now are morons. Let's talk about that right now. You're idiots. And I'm the guy who earlier in the season was talking about the John Fox situation, where I go, John Fox got fired with the Broncos, and they brought in what's his face?
Vic Fangio?
No. John Fox got fired, and they brought in the guy who was like the head coach, offensive coordinator, Texans, and some other places. Where was he?
Kubiak.
They're bringing Kubiak, and they go and win a Super Bowl. The very next season, they go and win a Super Bowl. And you say to yourself, okay, well, is the coaching really holding this team back? They're not going to fire Sean McDermott. But at a certain point, that locker room, like that kind of talk out of the locker room doesn't come from nothing, Chris. And the fact that they're willing to say it in front of a camera is a little bit more telling that there's some bigger conversations happening behind the scenes. I just want to know that over the next season or two, Sean McDermott can pull it together. How confident are you? 1 out of 10.
3. I don't think he's shown any indication that he can be a different coach than what he is. He's been the same coach for the last 4 years.
Chris?
7.
Oh, Chris is...
So, I mean, here's the thing. Like, as an organization, right? Like, this is a different time than Marv Levy and Jim Kelly, right? Like, you've got Josh Allen. Josh Allen can compete with any quarterback in the NFL, Mahomes, Burrow, all those guys. You cannot let Josh Allen get to the age of 30 without getting to a Super Bowl. Can't, period. End of story. So,
it's harder. It's going to be harder for him based on the AFC.
It's going to be a shit ton harder for him if he's got a coach that doesn't know how to manage a clock, doesn't know when to punt, doesn't know when to go for it, and can't get his defense to play any more than 10 yards off the ball on 3rd and 3. That makes it a lot harder for a quarterback to win any football games.
And when we have...
Oh, and here comes Ryan!
No, you cannot. I mean, when push comes to shove... In the old school NFL, the coach would always win. In the new NFL, you cannot waste a talent like Josh Allen and not get to the Super Bowl. If McDermott doesn't make a Super Bowl in the next 2 years, you have to fire him. I'm of the belief that if he doesn't make the Super Bowl next year, he needs to be gone. And, sorry, let me preface that. If he doesn't make it to the Super Bowl next year and it's glaring issues like we saw this year as to why they didn't make it, then he needs to go. If he goes and he changes the way he does things and he seems to be kind of figuring out how to be a better coach, better game manager, better clock guy, better in pressure situations, and they get to the Super Bowl and they lose to a team like the Eagles who somehow got better out of the offseason, okay, like let's run it back. If he goes out and punts the ball in plus territory when you're down 2 scores in a playoff game or wastes a timeout midway through the first quarter in a playoff game where you know it's going to be a shootout, or kick the ball deep when you should squib kick it, or play 15 yards off the ball on 3rd and 2 when you know that they're going to throw. Like, those are issues. How many more times can he do this before somebody finally says he's not going to get better? We got to go find somebody who can.
Well, I'll tell you this, Chris. Your thing was, mutiny in the locker room.
Yeah.
Stephon Diggs hasn't exactly been quiet about his displeasure with the way things ended and the way things went down the stretch.
He can do that.
Like, as a coach, right? Like, how are you not in Dorsey's ear yelling, why does Steph only have three catches and we're down two scores?
So let me explain that to you. I will explain to you exactly why. Because I have it on good, and this is where I'm going to wrap the podcast, because I want to end on a positive note. I want to end on, I've got something here. After hearing all of this conversation, this is how we're going to wrap this up for 2022. Because Sean McDermott is probably the most polarizing aspect of this entire thing. Stephon Diggs screaming at Josh Allen on the sideline. What the fuck are we doing, man? Waving at him, and Josh Allen's trying to just ignore him and just look at the tablet and be like, look, man, I'm just trying to do the thing here. We're doing the thing together. How many times? It was the Cleveland game.
Mm-hmm.
It started then. That's when you started to see cracks in this. You saw Stephon Diggs over having to be calmed down by Sean McDermott. And then they gave him the ball, like what, like three out of four passes, yeah, and it ended in a touchdown.
Yep.
And we go on to win that football game. He finishes the year with 1,400 yards. He's the first receiver in Bills history to go back-to-back-to-back over 1,000. Like, he's been our franchise's most prolific weapon of all time. If he's not happy, who am I to second-guess him? You're the guy. You're the guy doing the job. If you're not thrilled, mm-hmm, who am I to second guess you? He's second guessing the coaching staff. I got nothing else.
Yeah.
That right there is that's your barometer for how things are going behind the scenes.
Yep.
That being said, you can pull this together.
Oh, sure.
And in his final statement, it did interest me. This, because usually when it ends, like last year, it was just all about how disappointed they were. We're really sad that happened. It's going to be fine. We're going to be fine. It's going to be fine, blah, 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 blah. All the things you just talked about that were wrong, the off-ball stuff, the poor timeouts, the just disarray that was going on with the Bills. Sean McDermott's first major comment when he sat down at the table was, you are who you are in your last game.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a lot of people would talk about, like, a lot of people I saw in the media were talking about that when they wrote their articles in terms of, you are who you are. Well, he's talking about this. He's talking about this player. He's like, how do we know that this isn't some admission by himself that I kind of acknowledge that this is my fault?
Yeah.
You are who you are. Your football team is what they are. And I am the coach of this football team. My squad was what they were. And this is my fault.
Mm-hmm.
I am this. I am the coach of a team that laid down like a doormat. I need to be better. And with that in mind, I don't know. Sean McDermott doesn't strike me. Like, think about all the things. How fast was Rick Dennison gone?
Mm-hmm.
When he realized Rick Dennison, hey, we need a change.
Yeah.
Jettisoned into the sun. When he realized, hey, Tyrod Taylor's not terrible, but he's never going to get me. They didn't honor the rest of his contract. They could have.
Mm-hmm.
They chose not to. Because he knew, we're never going to get better with Tyrod Taylor as the guy. I need something else. Go get me something else. He strikes me as a very self-aware guy. And there's this, too. I have this on good authority, who I'm never going to divulge my source. You mentioned, why didn't he get in Dorsey's ass about what he was doing as an offensive coordinator? I know. Not just think. I know. And I will not divulge my source. I'll die first. Remember last year when we were all pissed off about the rushing attack, mm-hmm, and how it just felt very ham-fisted into the way we play offense? That was Sean McDermott.
Oh, sure.
Exerting his brand of pressure on an offensive coordinator to do a job the way he saw fit.
Yep.
It created an incredible amount of friction. Incredible. Culminating in a game against the Jacksonville Jaguars, where he then came to Jesus and said, I'm really sorry for being interfering. I've overstepped. This is your show, run it. What happened to the Bills for the rest of that season? After the Jacksonville game, what was the Bills' offense like?
They kept going as long as this podcast.
I think that there's a coach. You're seeing a coach who's learned a thing or two about the things that he's experienced and the things that he's done.
Yeah.
The things that he's been a part of. The reason he doesn't get in Ken Dorsey's ass is because, like, I've already alienated one person. I'm not going to do that again, not with a guy who I'm going to have to rely on next year. So I need to let him figure out his way. The other stuff, it sounds like almost capitulation on his point where he goes, my team was this. This is who we are. I need to fix that. It's the only reason I have any hope for who he could be next year. In fact, if anything, I'm almost excited to see it because I've seen some fire out of that guy. Come meet me at a bar somewhere. I won't talk about it on the air, but I'll tell you some things. I'll tell you some stories. It can be fun.
But I really want to be wrong, right? Yeah. Like, I let me preface that. Like, I want to be a seven where Chris is, and I want to have. I would love to have people come at me next year and go, you know, you were wrong about McDermott.
You know what the worst part is? You said I want to be a seven where Chris is. Well, first of all, you and I will never be more than a five. We are a hard five, and Chris isn't much farther. He's like a five and a half.
Well, the AFC is fucking stacked.
Well, we're talking about dad bod and bad hair, sir.
All right. Well, I have none of those. I'm just saying you got Mahomes, Herbert, you have Wilson could be better depending on what Sean Payton can do. You have Lawrence is on the upswing. Who's taking the first quarterback this year? It's going to be Houston. AFC is going to be hard to get to the Super Bowl, no matter who you are.
So Sean McDermott has his work cut out for him, but he sounds like a guy who I think, based on what I know, is content to put in the work. I can't wait to see it. I'm excited. And I'm happy that we can finally raise a glass, put this one to rest. Chris, to the end of the 2022 season, onward and upward. Let's go. Guys, I'm your host, Drew Gear. That's Chris Krueger. That's Ryan Lasel. And this has been your 2022 season wrap-up.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.